Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Tales from the Doghouse: Separation Anxiety Explained. I am Stacey Bell from Focused Fun in the U.S., and with me today is...
It's Ness Jones here, and I am from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded in Australia. And also we have...
in the UK, on a boat with a noisy dog, Sarah McLaren from Separation Anxiety Solutions. I have my tray of treats because I have joggers going past the window, which is really annoying. And there's another one. the joys of summer in England, living on a boat. So, today, we are starting the first in a series of podcasts, YouTube vlogs on, well, I'll say it properly first, misconceptions in dog training, commonly known between us three as myths. Conceptions, as in busting myths, and as in Stacey likes to make up words as she goes along, and that was one of them. So if you've been listening to us for a while, you'll know that myth conception is a common word amongst us three, and I'm pretty sure that soon it will be a common word amongst the general public, because why not?
Everywhere.
That word. Yes, it is a great word. So today's myth conception is all about crates and are they any good, whether to use them or not. Have you been told by your vet that you need to put your dog in a crate because they are destroying your house when you leave, or because they are going to the toilet when you leave? Have you been told by a trainer that you need to put your dog in a crate to teach them how to learn to be alone? All those things that you may have been told around your dog and a crate. And we've also got some information from an article that I read on in Facebook land, talking all about the legislation in other countries on crates and, you know, how do they get around it all. So, ladies, what's your version? What do we think to crates?
It's really timely at the moment with what's happening in Germany. Have they banned them, or they're looking at banning them? They're certainly banned in, I think, Sweden and Finland. Is that correct?
Yeah. So Germany's kind of... They've changed their laws in January, or some of the laws in January, around dog ownership, just in general. So it's not just around crates, it's around a lot of other things. But there was an opinion piece that I read on Facebook that gave you kind of like the rundown of some of the reasons that they've given for not crating dogs in Germany. So there's all the usual reasons in there. You know, they have no choice between whether they're cold or warm. They have no choice as to whether they, you know, want to move around, interact socially, which dogs are, as we know, very, very social. It keeps them socially, I can't think of the word now. Give me a word.
Isolated?
Yeah, socially isolated, which is not normal for a dog. And they looked at all those kind of things, which is pretty normal. Also that, you know, sometimes particularly if we're using it to keep them safe from children, which is something that a lot of people are told to do, you know, use a crate to keep your dog safe from children. If your children are still going up to the crate and poking their hands through it and the dog can't get away, that's not quite what we're supposed to be doing with it. The whole idea is that the dog can go there voluntary and that the door's open. So it's the dog's choice to be able to get away from things. But reason number five on this list was the practice of housing dogs in a crate because they destroy things when the owner is absent. In most cases, these dogs may suffer from severe separation anxiety. Now, that's the bit that I wanted to look at, because that's the bit, obviously, that concerns us the most, that people are being given information by trainers, vets, by other professionals, to put the dog in a crate to help it get over separation anxiety, particularly if the dog is eliminating in the house when they're not there, or when they are destroying property when they're not there. And that was the thing I wanted to look at. So in Germany now, what they say is that you can't leave a dog in a crate for more than 2 hours, pretty much. And the idea is if they do have crates, that the door should be open so that they can go in and out at will, so you're not actually locking them in there.
Well, as someone that suffers from claustrophobia, I can't think of anything worse them being locked in a lift or a cupboard or something, and then confronted with something scary, which for me would be cockroaches, but for a dog would be the owner leaving the house.
Mm-hmm. And I think regarding the post that you were looking at, I think a lot of those follow along with the five freedoms that I don't know if it's the five, I just think of it as the five freedoms, but it's like a globally recognized standard for animal welfare. And so it encompasses freedom from, they're all like freedom froms. I think they're all freedom froms, freedom from hunger and thirst, freedom from discomfort, freedom from pain, injury, and disease, freedom to express normal and natural behavior, and freedom from fear and distress. So a lot of what you were talking about in that that piece that the German legislation was resting on kind of reminded me of those five freedoms in a lot of ways. So I do find it encouraging that they're kind of resting it on an animal welfare approach. But I do feel like there is this in a lot of the vets and rescues and some vet behaviorists as well will recommend the crate as a first kind of way of trying to help your dog get over separation anxiety. And I think that misconception that that's going to help them feel better is really an unfortunate one, because I think I've only had one exception in my cases, my personal cases, where the dog felt more comfortable in the crate than out of the crate. So
was that a case that with that one dog, was that a case where the dog was already crate trained before you worked with them or not?
Yes, they were already crate trained. Yes. And the pet parent had a video, because I was a little skeptical, to be honest, that the dog was okay in the crate, but not okay out of the crate, just because I had never run into that before, honestly. And so in my mind, I was wondering if the dog seemed okay because they became shut down in the crate, which is sometimes the case, right? That they just, but this dog was literally just okay in the crate and not okay out of the crate. And this pet parent didn't want the dog to have to be in the crate, so we did training out of the crate, but she luckily had that backup of being able to put the dog in the crate if she needed to be gone longer than the dog could be comfortable out of the crate. So that worked really well in her situation. There wasn't as much pressure to find other people to sit for her dog when she was going to be gone. So
what would happen if she left the door open to the crate then, if she was
it wasn't okay? Yeah,
the door had to be shut.
Yeah, it had to be shut for the dog to feel okay, which is very unusual. I've had many more cases where somebody contacted me because their dog was breaking out of the crate, hurting themselves, destroying stuff in the crate. And then I said, have you tried the dog out of the crate? And they said, no, because I don't want them to destroy the house. And then, we set up a camera and did it, and the dog was absolutely fine. I've had many more of those types of cases than the case that I was originally talking about. It's just, I don't know. Have either of you had a case where the dog did better in the crate than out?
No, I've had one. I've got one where the dog goes in the crate voluntarily while they're working, but the door's open, and it just goes in there to lay there because it's one of its many places that it can rest, but not.
Right.
Not one that's actually done better in a crate, no.
I've had clients that I haven't had one that's one has crate trained. So mostly they've got crates. They might have a crate there and the dog will choose to go in and out if it feels that way. So same as Sarah. But none that we've removed from a crate and left to free roam. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because and I think, you know, everyone freaks out about it because they're so worried their house is going to be destroyed. But on the flip side of that is they often get very worried when their dog is inside the crate because we all, I'm sure you guys have had clients that pre they get to you that the dog has been in the crate and has seriously hurt themselves, come home and there's blood all over them, face might be cut up or their paws. Yeah.
Yes.
It's, and, you know, can you imagine coming home and your dog's covered in blood in their crate? It would be awful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And of course, the thing that happens there, especially when you get the ones that, so that the sort of like the standard crate that you get here, I'm assuming it's the same in Australia and America, are the sort of like the wire, or well, we get the, there's the material type ones, which of course people tend to use for traveling more than actually keeping the dog in. But then we have those sort of like wire framed type crates. Mm-hmm. And quite often you get dogs that have broken out of those because when you get a big, strong dog that's panicking, they can get out of there and they do themselves all kinds of damage. And then what happens next is that they are told by their, whoever it is who's advising them, to get an even stronger crate or to go and get an indestructible crate so that the dog can panic to its heart's content without doing any damage to any furniture at all. And that,
I know,
when you really think about that,
it's so sad. You know,
when people realize what's going on, I think it must just break them just a little bit to know that this is what's been going on, because that must be, I can't imagine how terrifying it is. I mean, like Ness said, as someone who's claustrophobic, if we shoved her in a crate with a spider, I can imagine she'd come out a bit of a wreck.
Cockroach. I could handle a spider. Yeah. Cockroaches.
Oh, no, no, you like spiders, don't you? Yeah, they taste nice. For those of you that haven't been listening for that long, at one point we think that Ness may have swallowed a spider
in my coffee
during a podcast in her coffee.
It might not have been. I don't know. It's a mystery. There was something in my coffee.
You kept a straight face through that.
No, but it was the ultimate act of professionalism when she swallowed the spider, but didn't do any, didn't choke, didn't spit it out. Nope, she just carried on.
I would have screamed and spit it out, honestly. More my style, but, you know.
So I feel the other thing that we do need to qualify here is that we're not crate bashing. We're not saying that crates are terrible things. You know, they're very, very useful. And at some point your dog will probably have to go in a crate when they go to the vet, or if you travel, or, you know, if they have any injury or anything and they need to be on crate rest, because, you know, if your vet tells you your dog's got to stay in a crate for 16 weeks, then you need to be pretty inventive not to be able to do that. But what we are saying is, number one, they don't fix separation anxiety. So if your dog's destroying things when you're not there, or toileting when you're not there, the chances are that the crate won't help. And that's what we want to talk about. Crate training in itself, if you can do that when you get your puppy or when you get your rescue dog or whatever it is that you've got, crate training in itself is a great idea, because, you know, if your dog has to go to the vet to go in a crate, it can't be anything worse than being stressed about something that you've never experienced. So we, that's for sure with the crate training. Just don't use it as a tool to fix separation anxiety.
Right. Yeah. And if you're kind of, I think one of the big things about testing to see how being in a crate impacts your dog with being home alone, I think it's really important to test that, right? So even if you feel certain that your dog is going to destroy, it may not be that your dog is 100% okay home alone when out of the crate versus in the crate, but in a vast majority of cases, being in the crate does make it more difficult for your dog. So it contributes to that anxiety. So getting them out of the crate or out of the confinement space, because sometimes it's not a crate, right? Sometimes it's just a confinement area, like one of those exercise pens, or sometimes it's the laundry room or the kitchen, or, you know, some other small area So it's not just crates. It's more kind of a confinement thing for a lot of dogs. Getting them out of that confinement and testing to see, you know, is it easier for your dog? And if so, let's set up a training plan without the crate to help your dog be okay. So
yeah,
I think the biggest argument that I hear from clients who have been crating so that their dogs don't destroy is that I don't want my stuff to be ruined. And then I think once they understand what the training is about and how we do keep the dog below threshold and we are watching them on camera, then they start mm-hmm. to understand, oh, well, hey, there's not really a risk of that because I'm watching them and we're keeping them below threshold. So the destroying isn't happening anyways.
And yeah. that comes back to the importance of having a camera on your dog.
Yes, yeah. That's also a theme running through our podcast is yes. the camera.
It's a camera.
The importance of the camera, right. And watching them live stream while on camera.
Yes. And that's another thing that we can't really do. I mean, there are so many cameras out there. So we never recommend any in particular, but you know, you can buy, I don't know, what's the cheapest camera you think you could get in America, Stacey?
I don't know the cheapest, but usually for around $20, $25 American dollars, you can buy a good camera that has all the functionality you need, has good customer support, it's good quality, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, we get cameras all the time in some of the sort of like cheaper supermarkets that we're talking like £15, that kind of thing. And they, you know, they do their job. I mean, they're not fantastic or marvelous, but if you just want to find out what's going on and you don't have any other way of doing it, that's one way. But also with the smartphones that we've got these days, you can get lots of free apps that you can use so that you can watch your dog on camera. And if you really can't find a way to be able to watch them live, then if you can record what they're doing and leave your phone in the house for 5 minutes and go back and watch it, that's better than not seeing anything at all. You know, you just need to and to be able to give yourself peace of mind that either things are great or actually you really do need to do something about this and get in touch with a professional, very wonderful selves, to help you help your dog stay home alone without a crate if they don't need it.
Zoom, actually, at the moment, I think you can go over 40-minute departures for free on their free plan. As of July the 15th, I think you can only do 40 minutes, yeah.
Right.
I was looking on the Zoom thing and they put up a message saying, as of July the 15th, you can only do 40 minutes free on the free plan, which is still good. I mean, because you want to go out and test it, don't you, initially for
A
very short time. So
so if it's just a matter of testing to see, hey, is my dog okay or not okay, then I would use one of those three things. Although I'm amazed at how many people have cameras in their homes these days.
Yeah, loads.
It just seems much more common.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of my clients who call these days, when I ask them about cameras, they say they've got one or they've got several. I mean, some of the camera setups that we get to look at these days are quite sophisticated. I'm quite envious, yes. to be honest.
Yes, I know. I'm always being a laptop. Really, there is a potential client that called me and she said her husband's a techie person and they have all these cameras already set up. And I was like, yay. It does make it a bit easier.
That's what we're like. But it doesn't, like we said, it doesn't always have to be, you know, use what you've got or what you can. If you can't, you know, if you can't afford to go buy something, then do what you can, because anything's better than nothing. And knowing gives you more power and more ability to do something about it. It's the not knowing that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
A big cuddly dog. Ness is being cuddled by a really large dog.
She's a brat. She's the ringleader. She's a troublemaker.
if
anything's going down, it's to do. She's the one that started it. This one. And what was I going to say about the cameras? I guess when they're not in a crate, when they're in a crate, they're easy to record because they're not anywhere. But yeah, you have to sometimes get a little bit creative when you've got a little bit more space for the dog to move around and with the cameras.
So what about, I think another objection to out of the crate-ness is
out of the crate-ness.
Yeah, that's that's another word I just made up.
Word of the week.
Word of the week, out of the crateness, is puppies. You know, so they're not necessarily to the phase where they know what they can and cannot chew on, or maybe they're not completely potty trained. So what are some strategies that we can support our puppy parents with for maybe having the dog out of a crate, but still being able to protect their stuff? Because even with puppies, it's not that they're panicking and chewing on things. It's, well, I mean, they could be, but in this case, what I'm thinking of is that they're chewing on the rug because it's there and because they're a puppy and they just don't necessarily know at this point that they can't chew on the rug.
Yeah. It comes down to management, doesn't it? And maybe not giving them access to rugs and, you know, using some sort of pen if you don't want to crate them.
Right.
Yeah, I think management
things, maybe, you know, Kongs or
I mean, management is a huge tool and it's massively underrated in the general public world. People think of it as a
cheating.
People seem to think of it as some kind of failing or cheating. You don't know, it's cheating if we do that. It's not cheating to help your dog get over a phase. I mean, like when his young earnship was this big, we had the puppy pen all set up and everything in the living room, but of course he decided that he couldn't do that and screamed the place down. So we were like, okay, that's clearly not an option for young Ernie. So we ended up almost penning the entire living room. So we were in it with him, but it made sure that he couldn't get to the stuff that we didn't want him to get to. The floor coverings that were in there were like rubber ones that I'd found old yoga mats and put them down so that if anything did happen to them, it wasn't a problem. Because all these things, certainly in puppyhood, are phases that they go through. And if they don't have access to certain things and they only have access to the stuff that you want them to have access to, then by the time you put the stuff in that you like back in your area, the chances are they're not going to need it anymore because they've gone through that phase. So all management does is management just helps you get through the phase that you're in now without causing stress, without causing anxiety, without causing pain, without you needing to be leaping about screaming and shouting because Fluffy's just stolen grandma's favorite teddy bear off the mantelpiece or whatever it is that you've left out. You know, the thing is that we do it for children. When we have toddlers, you know, we childproof the place. We put the plastic things in the plugs so that they can't electrocute themselves. You know, I remember one of my nephews posting digestive biscuits into the video recorder. So the video recorder was then moved out of the way so he couldn't post the biscuits in it anymore. But you don't scream at the child, you move the recorder because you know that, you know, 2 years old or one, you know, when they're little, they don't know any different and it's the same.
Right.
With the dog. I feel I'm on a soapbox here.
I think you are. I think you are on a soapbox, but I think it's so true. And I think if you kind of even think not only of how we work with children, but also wildlife. I mean, we put tree protection fences around trees so the deer or whatever don't eat the trees. But for some reason, that type of thing, we don't think to put the X pen around the entertainment unit so the dog can't get to the wires or whatever.
Yeah.
We think of boxing them in a small area. So I do think it's a little bit of a shift that could be really helpful just to kind of reframe that and like, how are we managing instead of creating our dog into a really small space? How can we give them more space? And I mean, the other thing to jump on that soapbox with you is a puppy is not going to learn to be okay out of the crate, like when you're home even is what I'm talking about, if they've never experienced that, right? So if they're like always in the crate, when y'all are just hanging out or when you don't feel like messing with them, then I kind of feel like they never learn how to settle outside a crate, and those are all skills that you can teach them, right? So I just I would rather arm them with the skills they need than put them in the crate for longer periods of time.
And lots of things that they can interact with, as many things as they can interact with as you can think of, to be fair. I mean,
right.
You know, we say to people about giving their dogs enrichment activities to do, and then you find that someone's bought one chew toy and it's like, you know, they need 10 chew toys, 20 chew toys, as many chew toys as you can find in as many different substrates, textures, types that you can find, everything. And the more you can do that way, the more enriched their lives are, and the less they worry then about being in a slightly smaller area. And again, we don't want to fence them in, but we also don't want them worrying about what's on the other side. So if you fence in the VCR, you don't want them trying to get to the VCR because they've got nothing else to do. Because again, that's what will happen is when they've got nothing else to do, that's when they start getting into trouble and going to look for things that you might not want them to do.
Right.
So true. Yeah. This one here on my lap, what was I doing? Oh, I was having a shower. And she decided when she was younger, she was an older puppy, let's say. Old enough to know better, decided to eat the old, not the study chair, but a different chair. And yeah, I could hear all the squealing and she was having a party and I'm like, oh, I'm in the shower, so there's not much she can do about
it. Quick.
And I'm like, this doesn't sound good. And yes, came out and there was big chunks out of the chair.
Oh, nice.
Which I managed to hide from my husband for like a few years, actually.
Wow.
That's until we moved. And then he's like, what happened to this chair? And I'm like, oh, Bertha did that, but that was like 3 years ago. So don't get cross with her now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a bit late. Yeah, no. I mean, you talk about older puppiness, but I mean, Ernie's just now looking, he's basically just up there above the computer looking at me. We talk about puppies, but I mean, in terms of training and all the things that we need to do with them and separation anxiety in particular, I think we're talking that at least the first 12 months, even if they are small dogs, I don't think you get. Obviously, there's a lot to be done in those first 12 months, but there's also a lot of things that are going to get in the way of your training in those first 12 months. You know, you've got hormones, you've got teeth, you've got puppy toilet training, you've got just general training, how to, you know, not eat this and just eat that and not bite grandma and not, you know, put teeth, all those things that we need to do. There's just so much going in there in that first 12 months, and it's no wonder we miss things every now and then, is it?
Yeah,
really?
That's true.
Yeah.
But they do need to learn. So again, in a crate, being in a crate to keep them out of trouble doesn't teach them anything. In fact, if anything, it just makes it worse in the long run.
The other thing about having puppies out of the crate that the other kind of objection a lot of times is when they're not fully potty trained. So for me, my response to that is always trying to look at what the current potty training schedule is. Like when you're potty training a puppy, you usually have them on a schedule. You know, do they go out every hour or every 2 hours or, you know, whatever their capabilities are. So looking at that and looking at the home alone training in that context. So like if they're going out every 2 hours, then, you know, just make sure that you're taking them out before you start training. And training, the thing that I love about, you know, the gradual departures is that it's so gradual, right? So the puppy is learning to be able to hold it for that time, to be able to not chew on that time, to self-entertain during that time, and to be home alone during that time. So they're learning more than just how can I not panic in this amount of time that I'm alone, but all of those other things too. And it's super gradual and you're watching. And so I think, you know, even a puppy or a dog that, maybe had been in a crate and doesn't have separation related behaviors at all, When you say, okay, now my dog is, or my older puppy is able to be out of the crate, like, how do you do that? You do that gradually. You don't, you know, if you had been leaving them 4 hours in the crate, you don't then just leave them 4 hours out of the crate. You, you know, test it out. Can, you know, can they be okay out of the crate or not? And it's that same kind of way of teaching them, but you're kind of getting, I think, a lot of things accomplished through that one training session.
And I think the sentence that in the middle of all that is that you will be watching them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Throughout all the training that we do, and throughout everything that we do with regards to whether, you know, whatever they do, the whatever signs of separation anxiety that you are seeing, whether it's destruction or vocalization or whatever it is, when we do the training, you will always be watching them. Well, there will never be a point until you get to a point where you're comfortable and feel that you don't need to watch them anymore because you know that they are okay mm-hmm. home alone. Up until that point, you will always be watching them. So they'll never get to eat the sofa. They'll never get to toilet all over your house. They'll mm-hmm. never get to, you know, eating the joint off the side on a Sunday. They won't get to do all these things because you will be watching them, and you will make sure that you can get back in there if anything untoward happens.
So, funny story about talking about eating food off the bench. So Mr. Big, when he was with his former owners, they had some friends around, and he, I don't know how old, he must have been young. I reckon he would have been under 1 year old. And he, they had their friends around, they were in the room, they'd cooked a pot roast and left it on the bench. Oh. And came back in to find it missing. He had this big stomach out here, and and because it was still hot, he had this like burnt lip, like big swelling on his lip because he was like determined to eat it. So that was it. The party gone. Yes.
Yeah. But I bet he had a tummy ache after that.
Yeah, I reckon.
Will he have cared? No, not a jot.
No. My our dog before Rowan's name was Tanner, and he was, you had to be so careful about leaving nothing out. Like nothing could be accessible. Cause he would open the freezer because it has like a bar across it, and he would open it sometimes when we were gone. And at the time we had horses, and if you like were actively feeding the horses and he was out there with you, which he always was, he would stick his head in like when you turned your back and try to eat the grain, but then it would make him so sick. It would make him so sick. So I got really good about closing it, you know, making sure that I was keeping it closed whenever I turned my back. But anytime we had a pet sitter watching all the animals when we went out of town, invariably, you know, it would happen when they were there. And he, you know, of course they don't put it together that when I eat the horse grain, I get really sick. But
that is one of the things that they are supposed to make a connection with, if something makes them vomit. So, I mean, did he just get a bit of a runny tummy, or did it make him vomit?
No, he would get diarrhea. A lot of diarrhea.
I was going to say, because that is one of the things that they do make a connection with, is if something makes them physically vomit, the chances mm-hmm. are that they will put towards together and won't eat it again, because you quite often have that, particularly if something's come in the middle. So they've eaten something that's actually made them sick, but then they've had a treat afterwards and then they've vomited. So then it's the treat that they avoid and not the original thing, which can be a problem.
Yeah.
But yeah, So, bless him.
Yeah.
They are daft at times.
Well, so are we. Like, how many times do we eat, like I know if I have one more than one donut, I'm not like going to be feeling good at all. But then like, so tempting to have that second donut. Is it going to be worth it? Hardly ever, but still do it. Anyways.
I never do that. Not at all.
You would never have more than one donut?
No.
Yeah, me neither.
Is that your kitchen, Sarah, behind you?
It's the galley.
Well, yeah, I was going to say galley, but
currently sitting in the dinette. And yes, behind me is the galley.
Wow.
Nice.
And forward is the saloon.
The saloon. Sounds very saloon.
Yes. It does, doesn't it? Why everything has different names just because we're in a tin? I don't know.
So tell us the update on the Ernie's separation or home alone training.
Molly and Ernie sitting in tree, K-I-S-S-I-N-G, not. So Molly is now capable of being left on her own on the boat for an hour or so without worrying about things. She's very settled on here now. We do need to leave the radio on because, as you've, with Ernie having the odd chirp, the joggers in particular seem to make her think that we're about to be burgled by a rabid jogger. So they, she's up there ready to repel boarders. So we leave the radio on. And with the radio on, she goes in her little bedroom and quite happily goes to sleep and sleeps until you get home. And we wake her up when we get back. So we've only left her a couple of times, but she's been fine both times. Again, we've got cameras so we can see what she's up to and not a peep. She's been lovely. So we left her for the first time for 10 minutes or so. Second time we left her for 40 minutes. And then I think the most we've left her is an hour and a half and she was fine.
Good.
The other one is still just getting used to the fact that he lives on a boat right now. So we will get there with him, but right now he is finding it more difficult. I think because Molly is an older dog, she's had more life experience and is less worried about just the whole thing. She seems to be doing quite well. The only thing she struggles with is the fact that there's an edge to the canal and if you go over it, then you get wet. So she's had her legs in a number of times when she decides that she must wee right on the edge of the canal and she'll lose a foot. So she's had wet toes a couple of times now. And Ernie's he's much better than he was, but we're still not to the point where I would want to do any departure training with him yet because he's still just that little bit on the anxious side about the whole thing. So we'll give him a little bit of time yet, but we'll definitely get started with him.
Yeah, it's a big change for him.
Yeah. And he's not overly keen on the engine. So the other thing he has to learn is when we're on the move, I spoke about locks last time.
Yes.
So he's either got to stay on the boat when one of us goes to open a lock or he's got to go with whoever it is who has to open the lock. So if he goes with you, then he needs to be tied to a post. So he has to stay there while you do all the busy stuff. That's another thing he's learning. So he's learning that being tied around the post and going and doing stuff is not the end of the world. And we use an awful lot of these and we do tie him to the post and then he does find it while we do the locks.
Mm-hmm.
So he's getting that. Slow bird. Good. And there's no crates on my boat.
Oh, gosh. Could you imagine trying to fit a crate on your boat, especially for Molly?
I can't. It doesn't even... I mean, fortunately, she's got her own bedroom. There's an area under the engine bay that's just dog-sized, so her bed's in there, and she can go under the engine bay, and she's quite happy in there. I mean, it's open, so she can come in and out, but it does give her her own area, so we're not falling over it. Although we do have one of the beds is right down here next to me. Which is right in the middle of the walkthrough, so you have to walk across a bed. But that's okay. You know.
It's all good.
Dog life.
Yeah.
So if, dear listeners, you do have any questions about crates and anything any burning desire to know anything about a crate, then please feel free to ask a question. We'll be happy to answer, won't we?
Yeah, sure will.
And be nice, because if you're not nice, then we're not.
Yeah, true.
I said, be nice when you ask your questions, because if you're not nice, then we won't answer.
Yeah. All right.
We like nice people. It's true. Yeah. Okay, so just to recap, I think the big thing about crates is that it adds a layer to the anxiety. So even... instead of changing the dog's emotions, which is what we work to do when we're doing the training. So even if you get that stronger crate and it's containing your dog is still panicking inside or has shut down or But they have not become more comfortable with being home alone. So we really do want to get them out of the crate, make sure, you know, see if they're doing better, start their training, and help them feel comfortable with being home alone.
You guys have been listening to Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained. And my dogs know that we're wrapping up. they're just like, whoop, what's going on? I'm Ness Jones. I am in Australia from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded.
And I am Stacey Bell with Focused Fun in the US.
I'm Sarah McLaren from Separation Anxiety. Anxiety Solutions, oh my word, in the UK. But if you have been watching this on YouTube, please subscribe on the subscribe button, wherever it may be, and you should get a notification to let you know when we've got the new video. It's been great being here again, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks with more misconceptions. Remember that, folks. Misconceptions.
Yeah, yep. That's it.
Bye.
Bye.